This is How Have You Not Seen, a movie podcast where every week we fill in the gaps in each other's cinematic knowledge by asking important questions like, oh, come on, you never watched Lost in Translation? Or,
you seriously never saw Solaris? Or,
how have you not seen Prisoners? Welcome back, everyone, to How Have You Not Seen. I am your co-host, Carson Betts.
And I am your other co-host, Caroline Thompson.
This right here is a movie podcast where every week one of us chooses one of our favorite films the other hasn't seen.
We talk about it.
Then we go and watch the movie.
And then we talk about it some more.
It is, I am not going to sugarcoat it, going to be the worst time.
Great. I love that
Prisoners,
for me.
I think this movie is real freaking good, and I like watching it, but it is like the Prisoners is the worst hang imaginable.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
David Sims on Blank Check at one point referred to Prisoners as the only movie that has no jokes in it. And I think that that is the best descriptor of the movie Prisoners. That being said, Caroline, how have you not seen Prisoners?
Okay. The year is whatever year Sicario came out.
Sure. 2011? Maybe?
Yeah.
2015.
Wait.
Oh, I went the wrong direction. Came out.
Yeah, because so I was going to say, because that's what I was going to say is.
Sicario, then Arrival.
Yeah, Sicario comes out and it's like, it gets these great reviews. And everyone's like, whoa, like, who's this guy? Like, that's crazy. Ah, blah, 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 blah. And then it was like, I was like, wait. Did we all know that Denis Villeneuve, director of Sicario, a few years back did this little film called Prisoners with Jakey G and Hugh Jackman, and it was like, and everybody was going and revisiting it. Like, don't get me wrong, that film had like some impact on its, you know, on its arrival, but it was one of those things where on its arrival,
on its arrival.
No pun intended. Yep. But so it was one of those things where, like, after Sicario came out and, like, was the big movie that it was, and the critical success that it was, it was like, okay, well, it's time to go back and check out these other guys' films because this guy is, like, here to stay. And it's one of those movies that I have been meaning to watch for that reason for years. And I just haven't because – it sounds upsetting.
Yes, correct.
And I feel as if, it's just not the film that when you're scrolling the Netflix, when you're scrolling the Primes to pick a movie to watch, it's not one you see, oh, they have Prisoners, and you click on it, you know?
Yeah, it's not like Forrest Gump. They're not playing it on TNT every day.
Right. It's not really a film that you say, okay, well, like, I've got some time to kill. Like, let's throw something on. Oh, Prisoners. What a good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I've not seen it. Yeah.
Fantastic. We were going to do this movie last season. Because the whole idea was like, well, we'll kind of do it a little bit after Dune 2 comes out. And then, of course, Dune 2 got pushed. So
we pushed the episode,
So we pushed the episode. We got to do it after Dune 2. We had to see the latest hot new shit from Denis. That being said, what do you know about Prisoners?
So I know that it's Jake Gyllenhaal. And
yes, ma'am.
It is Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman.
Yep. Wolverine and Mysterio.
That is one way to look at it. And okay. Is this movie just darker, more self-serious, law-abiding citizen? Because that's what this movie is in my brain. It's that one of them wronged the other one.
Plot. No, not that aspect, no.
Okay. Because, yeah, in my brain, this has the same. And maybe it's just because the posters, because the poster for Law Abiding Citizen, these are two films that I've scrolled past many, many, many dozens of times on streaming. But the posters for them is one actor above the title in like a split screen, and then the other main actor below the title in a similar headshot. And that's kind of that's the formula for both of these films.
Correct. Like their poster. Jamie Foxx and Gerard Butler. Yeah. It's two guys looking in opposite directions. Yep.
Yep. And so in my brain, I know that tonally they are very different, and that Law Abiding Citizen is very pulpy, where this is a Denis Villeneuve movie. So it's probably extremely self-serious. That is not shade. That's just how the man works. Yeah. So I just kind of assumed this was more self-serious Law-Abiding Citizen.
Do you know any of the other actors in the movie? It's a good cast.
My brain is just like, oh, Anne Hathaway, but that's just Brokeback Mountain with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
No, I don't know any of the other actors.
Okay, fantastic. We're going to keep that a secret.
Okay.
Do you know anything else about this movie?
No, I truly don't. In my brain, it was like a revenge. It was a revenge thriller. I just know that
that's not a bad thought. There's an aspect of that in there.
Yeah. And like, I will say, like, it is one of those things where like, we've kind of mentioned it, but it's just like, I do know that this film is like very harrowing and upsetting from what I understand. Like, it is a film that is very like, maybe not actually like viscerally violent, like capital V violent, but I do know that it is a film in which people are just fucking terrible to each other.
Yeah. I will say, to maybe lay your fears a little bit, yeah, this movie is a bad hang. It is so, so in the gutter. It is really upsetting. It is about some of the worst stuff I've ever seen. It is also super duper duper watchable. Like, it works as a thriller blockbuster in spades. It's kind of it's kind of similar to Zodiac in that way, where it's like both really disturbing and upsetting, but also just super friggin' good to watch. Do not mind watching. If they did play Prisoners on TNT in the middle of the afternoon, I don't know how they would censor it in a way that would make that make sense. But if they were, I would sit down and watch it to the end every single time. It's a good friggin' movie.
Yeah. TNT played Prisoners, and I sat my ass down and listened.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
All right. Well, if you don't know anything else, I think it's time for the game this week, Caroline.
All right, let's go. Let's go for it.
Okay, we are doing Recast It. That is a game, if you've not played it with us before, a game in which before watching the movie, I am going to provide Caroline with some of the actors in the movie and ask her to come up with alternate castings for the characters they play before she's seen the movie. So, you know, are the castings going to be good? I don't know. We'll find out. That's the game. Sometimes we like to do a version of that game, usually for, you know, romantic comedies and two-handers, in which we only do the top two billed actors. And that's what I want to do this time. Not because these two characters are in any way in any kind of relationship that is good, but because they're two very interesting boys, and I want to see what you come up with, like, to change the characters in the movie.
Okay.
So I want three alternate castings for Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal in the movie Prisoners.
Okay, for Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal. Oh man, this sucks because I don't have very strong opinions on Jake Gyllenhaal. Or I mean, sorry, on Hugh Jackman, but I love Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, I was about to say, other than he's hot, like your overriding opinion on Gyllenhaal?
Like maybe the man in cinema that I am the most attracted to is Jake Gyllenhaal.
Roadhouse coming this summer.
More like Ambulance coming 2 years ago. He's so hot in Ambulance. It's absurd. It's illegal.
He's a weirdo, but he's real hot.
It's a jailable offense.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me think here. Okay. All right. So my guiding principles are going to be hot and weird, because those are, because I think Jackman is kind of a weird dude, respectfully, putting respect on his name. So number
one. He's a weird guy.
Yes. Which one thing that I will say, like, I mean, I love Jackman as Wolverine. I think he's like, I think he's so good as that role. Like, nobody may be better on earth to have played that role, especially in the early 2000s. However, one thing that I do that is so regrettable about how popular he got in that role is he is so good at doing different things. And he's such a little, he's just such a little weirdo, and he's such a little theater kid that, like, I do mourn the just the sheer amount of weirdo energy we lost out on.
We will maybe talk about this more in the second half, but Hugh Jackman's a guy where I am so used to thinking of him as literally the greatest showman. Like, he is just he's a consummate musical theater performer. And, like, my favorite Hugh Jackman roles are, you know, in, like, The Prestige, in which, like, the fact that he's a theater kid is used to great effect in that character. Such that sometimes I remember that he's Wolverine, and it takes me a second where I go, that's horrible casting. Why would you put Hugh Jackman as the Wolverine? That doesn't make any sense. And then I remember that he's very good as Wolverine.
Correct. Yeah. All right, so pairing one. I'm going to go Ryan Gosling.
For Hugh Jackman?
In the Gyllenhaal role. No, in the Gyllenhaal role.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go Christian Bale.
Ooh, yeah.
For Jackman, for Weirdo. Next, I am going to do, for my second trick, I am going to do, see, there's so many good weirdos out there. Not many people that I personally find to be all that hot on the male side of acting. So I'm going to do number two. I am going to do, Michael Fassbender in the Gyllenhaal role. Okay. Less because I think he's hot and more that I think he is, like, very conventionally handsome.
He's the killer, so yeah.
Yes. And then I'm going to pair him for his weirdo. It's going to be Mark Ruffalo. An all-time weirdo for me.
All-time hottie for me, but yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And then my third pairing, I am going to go, see, the next two are both hot weirdos, so I'm wondering who to put where, but I think my next two are going to be in the Gyllenhaal role. I'm going to go Adam Driver, and then here's what I'm going to do. In the Gyllenhaal role, I'm going to do Adam Driver, and in the Jackman role, I'm going to do Tom Hardy. However, this is an off-Broadway production, and they change roles every night.
Oh, shit. I'd watch the shit out of that.
Yes. So that is that. Also, before you even get there,
I think it's correct answer to this one. You just don't know it.
I just don't know it. I think Jake Gyllenhaal is Bugs Bunny and Hugh Jackman is Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Is that the correct answer? That's the wrong answer.
Jordan is Jackman and Bugs is Gyllenhaal?
Yes.
I think that's the look. Okay, both would be pretty funny, but I think that's the correct answer. Yeah. Actually, wait. Now I'm kind of thinking of it a little bit more. I'm thinking maybe Bugs would be pretty good in the Hugh Jackman role. We'll talk about it when we come back, actually, because I'm thinking of some really horrible things that Bugs could spin into some good shtick.
Yeah. Well, what do you know?
All right. Are you ready to go watch Prisoners?
I am as ready as I will ever be to go watch Prisoners.
Yeah, I'm super ready to go watch Prisoners. Let's do it.
everyone. This is Caroline with How Have You Not Seen? Normally, this is where we would put an ad break, and we are going to direct you all, starting in with our 2024 season, for the remainder of the season, and hopefully not much longer after that, but who knows. We are going to ask that in lieu of following one of our sponsor links, which we love and we're so thrilled to have them, we are going to ask you all to head over to PCRF.net. That is the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. And if you are a fan of the show, if you're listening to the show and you're hearing this and you do have some money to spare, we are going to ask that in this time you send some money over there. That would really mean a lot to us. As such, we are also going to be donating all of our January Patreon funds to the PCRF as well. We just really think that at this time, that's something that's really important to do. So again, that is PCRF.net. That is the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. Anything you can give, it all goes towards helping children on the ground in Gaza and in the West Bank and in Palestine. So thank you all so much for listening, and we're going to get back to the show.
And we're back.
Yeah, we sure are, from not sunny Pennsylvania.
Caroline, are you still stuck in a hole? Sounds like you're still stuck in a hole.
I mean, I am very interested to see what we are going to say about this movie, because I feel like I do actually have like a decent amount to say about this movie. So, but it is very upsetting. Like, yeah, I mentioned up top, it's going to be a very upsetting time.
Is that kind of your overall take? Do you have any like grand thesis?
I don't really have a grand thesis. I have, I think my biggest take is I liked the first half better. The half where we're spiraling for answers and it's about how people react to tragedy and how people react to the most awful things in the world. I like that half better than the half when we're actually starting to get some answers. Yeah. And then the kind of the big thematic question I kind of want to parse out is, this film gets weirdly a little bit Jesus-y. Like, that's ultimately what, I mean, that's literally the aunt, who's not really the aunt, spoiler alert. That's what she says, is we take children to fight our war against God. And that is all she says in terms of a motive. Like, she's like, it turns people like you into demons. And then like, that is it. And it's just like, whoa, like kind of a very, especially too, because man with a very real, definitely a real human name, Keller Dover, Hugh Jackman's character, Keller Dover, yeah, is like, it kind of like bookends his story with praying. Like, and there's like a lot of moments where he's like deliberately, like he is like praying, which is only ever in interesting, which I'm sure we'll get into. Like, I think the moments when the writer chooses to have him pray are kind of telling, but just the whole, like, he's kind of religious here and there throughout the movie. And then her ultimate motive is, by the way, I'm fighting a war against God. Done. It's kind of like, whoa, okay. Interesting. But yes.
Whoa. Okay. Interesting. I disagree. At least in that, I don't find this movie to be advocating for any kind of religious belief. I think that it plays with the idea of religious.
I don't think it's advocating for religious belief. Sure. I just think that like,
there's some Jesus in there.
There is some Jesus sprinkled through here in ways that are not fully explored in ways. Yeah. It's one of those things that it's kind of like, well, I either want you to give me a lot more of that, or I need you to like scratch that out, because like,
okay.
Yeah.
We can get into it. Certainly. We got to get back to the game real quick. I want to say this, that kind of relates to my grand thesis about this movie, which is that this movie is, and also why I like the back half of the movie too, is because this movie's real silly.
Okay, interesting.
This movie's real goofy.
Okay. I'm interested to explore that take.
The two main characters, as you said, are named Keller Dover and Detective Loki.
Yep.
This movie's basically a comic book. And then
Paul Dano's character's name is Alex Jones.
Alex Jones, wild. It literally, like, this came out in 2013, a year before, like, Alex Jones was a household name. Look at that. Okay, we got to get back to this game.
Yes, we do.
And we had recorded the first portion of this podcast quite a while ago. So I had forgotten that we did recast it. I'm looking at your recastings right now, and I love them. So we just did the two leads. We definitely, you know, this is a very stacked cast, especially for 2013. We could have certainly done the top five, but like I find the weird intense energies that the two lead guys are giving to be really interesting in this movie. And so I really wanted to focus on them.
Yes.
So you recasted them each three times. Your first recasting, which is maybe the one that's like, I could see this being the alternate version of this movie in real life, is Christian Bale for Hugh Jackman, and then Ryan Gosling for Jake Gyllenhaal.
I think that movie works, actually.
I think it works. I think Gosling brings a very different kind of intense weirdness to the role, but I think he could do it.
Correct. No, I agree.
I actually think... I think Christian Bale is maybe better casting
than Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, I think so.
I kind of think I agree.
I mean, I don't think
Hugh Jackman is bad. I think he's actually giving a very good performance.
Yes. But
I do find it very funny that like Hugh Jackman like got his start as like Australia's Broadway boy. Mm-hmm. And like he is a song and dance fan. He's a theater guy, truly. And he is like such, if you ever see him in real life, he is such a joyous man and he has so much fun. And like the role, the big screen role he has done in his career that is most like who Hugh Jackman A, was in his theatrical career, and B, who he like most closely resembles in real life is The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
Like he is such a vibrant person, and like, it's so weird that he plays like that. He's like Wolverine, which is great casting. Don't get me wrong, but like he's Wolverine and he's Jean Valjean in like the most like gritty, harrowing version of that movie. He's Keller Dover in Prisoner. You know what I mean? It's just, it's so funny to me that he is like known for being this like insanely grizzled, insanely like intense actor when like he doesn't need to be.
No, and we'll maybe circle back to this a little later, but I like you mentioned Jean Valjean and Wolverine, and those are like the comic book, like the exaggerated comic book version of the grizzled badass. And the melodramatic musical theater version of a grizzled badass.
Yeah.
And like
Yeah, it's like there is a theatricality to both of those roles that works really well. And I do think he's good in this. I really do. Do not get me wrong.
No, he's really good.
He is. I just know how much sauce he has to put on it to do this, which is like one of those things where it's like, if I had never seen Hugh Jackman before in my life, I think I would watch his performance and be like, whoa, like who's that guy? He's doing great. But just because I know who he is IRL, it does create almost like this artificiality to this role with like how hard he has to work to kind of be perceived as the psychologically real, devastated like person who's like broken with reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this is not a naturalistic performance by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, it goes, the reason why Bale works so well, it's the prestige dichotomy. It's their, you know, it's what exactly that movie is about. It is, you know, Hugh Jackman is a guy who has total control of his instrument and is incredibly charismatic and is very focused on working hard to deliver to you exactly the thing that you need, or at least that you perceive that you need. whereas Christian Bale is actually just a weird, crazy, obsessed guy, like kind of in real life a bit.
Yeah, and is able to tap into the reality of whatever he needs to and like gives it to you.
If like, you, yeah, like if it was like, okay, these, in this, you know, let's say both of these guys had daughters and they both got stolen. If you told me that Hugh Jackman created the torture shower, I'd be like, no, what? That's what? That's so weird. I would never guess. If you're like, Christian Bale made the torture shower, I'd be like, I assumed he already had one.
Right.
Like probably just on standby, just in case.
He had to make one, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, next recasting. This is the weirdest one. This one's real out there. For Hugh Jack, you went Mark Ruffalo. And for Gyllenhaal, you went Michael Fassbender.
I think if you switch them, they actually work better. I think that casting works better if you switch the two of them. If it's Fassbender as Jackman and Ruffalo as Gyllenhaal. I think they're both very different movies, but I think actually swapping them works a little bit better.
This is like the svelte European version of the movie. I say that not just because that is what Michael Fassbender is, but like, I think maybe for me, the issue with him being the Hugh Jackman role is that Hugh Jackman is Australian, but he is projecting a sort of American masculinity that Michael Fassbender does not have. He is like,
yeah, he does not have it, but I think he is a skilled enough actor that he could. I buy in the reality where we have the two characters, the Jackman character, which is kind of like over exaggerated, tortured American masculine ego. And then you have the Gyllenhaal character, which is like kind of kooky detective who is just a little off. I think that Fassbender works better. I think Fassbender creates a more cynical projection of American masculinity, and Ruffalo plays a slightly better, like, eccentric, weird cop. But maybe I'm just thinking Ruffalo's Zodiac.
I was about to say he's just Zodiac, but like two steps more. I think Fassbender would be a really good Loki. I think he'd be very good.
I think he could do that too. I just cannot see any universe in which Ruffalo is the Jackman role.
No.
Kind of like we're min-maxing here, right? It's like we have to cast Ruffalo and Fassbender. The min-max version is we have a terrible Dover and a pretty good Loki. Or we have like that's the min-max versus like, okay, if we actually like kind of try to round out this cast, if we swap them across the board, it's better.
Your third recasting, and I think if I'm remembering correctly to when we recorded the first half of this podcast, I think I know what this shorthand I wrote in my notes at means, but you wrote for the Hugh Jackman part, Tom Hardy, and for the Jake Gyllenhaal part, Adam Driver. And then I wrote a shorthand that suggests that maybe the two could be flipped.
I see. Yeah. No, I like that, actually. I think it works
style.
Either way. Yes. Oh, yes, that's exactly what I said.
They trade off either night. Yeah.
Yes, it's two of them, but every night they trade off. They shoot each scene twice.
Yeah. Oh, man. Tom Hardy would also be really good. As
Loki,
the Hugh Jack role. I want him less as Loki. I want him in as Keller.
I want him in both.
Big dumb sack of meat guy. He's so big.
Yeah, but he's also
twitchy.
Right. I was gonna say he also does his Eddie Brock voice sometimes in movies.
It's true. He would be so Eddie Brock if he was Detective Loki.
That's what I'm saying.
That's true. Driver could do either.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's also a guy that if you told me he's got the torture shower, I would believe you. You did honestly the most interesting one here. And I don't know, but you did the classic Michael Jordan, Bugs Bunny casting, Hugh Jackman as Jordan and Gyllenhaal is Bugs.
Yeah, that's correct. That is the correct.
Here's what I love about it. Here's what I love about it is that Bugs has his ears slicked back the whole time.
Correct. Yes.
Oh, that'd be pretty good. Oh, and he's constantly blinking and he's got a dead stare. That's really funny. Also, if Paul Dano was Paul Dano sized and Keller was Michael Jordan sized
and Bugs Bunny was Bugs Bunny sized.
Oh, that'd be pretty good. But then it does beg the question is like, Michael, just hop out of the hole. You're right near the top.
Right. That's true. You would not be able to trap Michael Jordan in that hole. No, it's funny because as I have mentioned several times on this podcast, I do rock climb. And so actually in the moment when Gyllenhaal jumps down into the basement, I go like, Jake, how are you going to get out of there? I'm like, I know how I would get out of there. I would be able to get out of there, but how are you going to get out of there, Jake? Because you're not going to be able, you don't know you can get down there. You should be calling for backup right now.
Imagine all the physical comedy Bugs Bunny could do if he kept opening up 10 boxes full of snakes. The snakes Jesus could talk Christ. To him. It'd be really good.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. This, and I want to see how this hits you. I want to see if you think that I'm a psychopath. This is the third time that I've seen this movie. The time I watched this movie, it really like calmed me down. Like this movie was like just a nice warm blanket for me. There's like a list of movies that like, and they're all pretty calming to me for a variety of very odd reasons, but movies that I frequently will watch like the first 40 minutes of before I go to sleep. I think that Prisoners might have joined those ranks this watch.
Is it just because it's quiet and gray and feels like it's storming outside?
It is really quiet. That is a good reason. It's really quiet and like all the moments. It's such a tense film, but that's because like very rarely do any big moments of explosive action actually occur. Like those are fairly few and far between. Like even the torture scenes are all about sustained, prolonged action rather than outbursts. That's what like makes things like the, you know, like Jackman shattering the sink with the hammer so effective. And I don't know. I think partially it's that. I think there's something about the fact that I very well know the ins and outs of this really kind of ridiculous yet very disturbing mystery plot now. I don't know what it is. Am I becoming like one of those suburban moms who like falls asleep listening to true crime podcasts? Is that what's happening now?
No, I don't think so, because I think that's different, because true crime podcasts are at least like frequently like women drinking wine and cracking jokes, or like they are you know, carefully constructed to have a sense of like dangerous curiosity, but also safety for the listener, where this movie is very much constructed to suck horribly. So, and be really not fun at all.
Yeah.
Complimentary, yeah. Of course. I say that as a compliment, but
yeah. No, this movie's no fun. I mean, I don't know. I had a lot of fun watching it this time. At least it's very compelling. It works, like it's such a stressful film, but I do think it works as a traditional blockbuster. Like this movie made a lot of money.
Did it really?
This movie, the listed budget is $46 million. It made $122 million.
Oh my gosh.
This movie was That's huge wild. In 2013. Like this, it only got one Oscar nomination, and I think that's you know, partially just because it's a trashy thriller,
and also because the Oscar nomination it got is for Deacons, which is great,
incredible. It's a really good looking movie. Like this movie is a very good looking movie. So good. Blade Runner 2049 obviously is the venue of Deacon's collaboration that is a lot showier. And a lot more colorful, but like the ways that they find the levels in a color palette that is pretty much all blue and gray is like really, really interesting. But I don't know. I think partially that's just because this had the stink of like, well, this is like thriller fare for the common man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is like the like scary movie you go and see with your older brother.
Is that a kind of movie that people know?
I mean, I'm just saying, like, as you know, like your older brother sneaks you in a movie. I don't know. I'm an only child. I don't know nothing about having siblings.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm just making something up.
That's fair. Let's talk about this movie.
Let's do it.
Where to even begin? I'm very curious as to where we even begin because like I mentioned up top, I found the first half of this movie a lot more compelling than the back half for me personally. And I'm curious as to hear your thoughts about that, because for me, you know, I was kind of watching this and, you know, like really feeling for these characters, really feeling the like, oh my God, like this would be the worst thing ever. Like, I understand why Jackman's losing his fucking mind and is like off his rocker. I understand why like his wife is like unable to get out of bed and is like taking pain pills to sleep. You know what I mean? Like, I understand like all of this. And it was one of those things where like, then he kidnaps Alex and I'm just like, oh, this movie. Yeah. I was like, okay, this, I mean, a weird analogy to make, but I'm like, oh, this is about to become hard candy, right? Like this is now no longer a movie about solving a mystery. This is now a movie about like, about Hugh Jackman is going to cross a line and is then going to have to like deal with like, I took justice, I took law into my own hands, and now it is going to be this movie about like, how does he now escape this crime? And then it's kind of that, but it's also kind of not, because like, I feel like for me, this movie is almost a little too clean at the end. Like,
yeah.
The thing that grabs me about this movie is not that it's a very clockwork Agatha Christie, oh my gosh, everything makes so much sense film. The thing that grabs me about this movie is like, oh, this is like a film about how like when there is like a collective trauma in a community, right? Like the police are ineffective. So like you, so it's like, I feel for Hugh Jackman because I'm like, no, you can't, like, I actually can't expect Hugh Jackman to like stay home and let the police do their jobs because like, let's be real, police don't like frequently help solve crimes, right? Like,
yeah,
like police frequently drop the ball. They are frequently very ineffective.
Also just in the construction of this film, the plot is such that like, there is one hot lead and like, it ain't that hot. Like there's, we got this one kid and he is not telling us shit, nor could he.
Right. And so then like, so I'm vibing with this movie in this regard of just like, I'm just like, okay. Like I was like, I really, really, really like what's going on in the first half, because I'm like, it's really mired in and kind of like exploring this, like, we are like he's literally like, he's not a doomsday prepper, right? He's not like, oh, the government's gonna come and like gotta, but he's like, I have a cellar full of like, you know, emergency supplies, right? If there's a flood, like we'll be covered. If there is like a wildfire and there's like smoke in the air, like we'll be covered, right? Like I've got like all the supplies, all that stuff, in a way that seems like, you know, maybe a little intense for just like your average Joe, but not in like a weird, scary way, just in like, I have a bunch of provisions in my basement, you know, very Boy Scouts, right? Like,
I think it's a little scary. There's a lot of guns in that basement.
Yeah, but I'm talking, okay.
A lot of guns in that basement.
But I guess I guess.
See what you're saying though. I get your point. Yeah.
Where I'm getting at is like, I like the theme of like, you can never prepare for this and there is no way to actually, rationally, like our society is not set up in a way to actually care for people,
who are like going through this, right? Like the police don't do their job. You can't take the law into your own hands. There are no answers. Like getting revenge won't help you. Like you are just, you're just destroyed. Like your sense of stability and safety in your community is so tenuous, right? And like, I like that, like as upsetting as this movie is and like whatever, when that sense of safety is shattered, just like seeing all of the shards. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is so like, I was like, I get it. Like, I get why everybody's acting this way. Like, this is terrifying. Like, this is scary. And it's like, you know, I kind of, like I mentioned, like Jackman is like you gotta be prepared. And it's like, there's nothing you can do to prepare for this. And I like that. And then as we get into the back half and like pieces start coming together, and they do come together in a way that like, it never feels cheap. It doesn't feel cheap to me, but it does feel a little like this isn't why I'm here, right? Like a few too many like pieces of the puzzle. It's a few too many red herrings, like a few too many like twists and turns that I'm just like, I don't really need that, right? Like I don't really need all this. And then like, and then there's the moment too where Desmalchian, again, spoilers for the fucking movie, but Desmalchian kills himself.
Yeah.
And there's like almost an hour left in the movie. And again, my brain goes to, oh, cool. I was like, this is now a movie about like the closest thing we can get to justice has been served. And Hugh Jackman still has a completely innocent, mentally like, you know, like mentally ill young man built into a torture shower in his wall. And now he has to live with that. Like now life is gonna go back to normal. And like, he's crossed through. Like I was excited for that movie. And then it's not that, because it's then pretty quickly revealed like, oh, actually like Desmalchian like didn't kill the girls. And like, there's the real killer is actually still out there. You know what I mean? And so I'm just like, that is not what interests me about this movie. So I liked this movie, but I was a little just kind of like, a little too neat.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that was more or less my response the first time I saw it. Having seen it a few times, I kind of don't care. I find the twists and turns in the plot to be easy enough to grasp onto and exciting enough and weird enough that they hold my attention, but also not so exciting and weird that you completely lose track of what's going on. Because it's not as though this is like some kind of really twisty Agatha Christie. That's a look at that little rhyme. Agatha Christie-esque, as you said, like constructed plot. It's like kind of three turns. It's like a couple of little twists. It's got, you know, the Agatha Christie thing of, well, the person who did it was actually there the whole time and you just didn't
notice.
Right, and
all of the clues are like there. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
but every time. Also, yeah, go on. Sorry.
No, you can go for
it. I don't. Also, watching this the third time, I'm like, there is no. Like, a lot of murder mysteries, you can sometimes look at them and sometimes the joy of a murder mystery is to look at it and try it, figure it out yourself. And sometimes you'll, as an audience member, like put the clues together and go, oh, well, you know, watching this as an audience member, if you just use some lateral thinking, you could have put this thing together. Or like, oh, the characters, if they had just not paid attention to this thing instead of this thing, they would put it together. And like watching this movie a few times, I think part of the like purposeful construction of it is like there is kind of no world in which anyone puts together that this is what happened unless it goes down this way. Like, I don't really foresee the version of events in which, you know, let's say that Hugh Jack doesn't build the torture shower and he doesn't end up, you know, figuring out the thing about the maze and doing all that. I don't know. It's hard to say. Or, you know, had Loki not just so happened to go down the seeming red herring that was the Dasmalchian subplot. Like, it's hard to see, like, oh, is there a better line of questioning? Is there something that he could have looked at that would have led him to this eventuality? I don't really think there is.
No,
I think it's more about just which I think lends itself to, as you were saying, the themes of like this thing happens and there's no way to overcome it. And I think kind of the drops of the themes of religion in the movie, which are like, just sometimes there is nothing you can do. There's just nothing to be done.
Right. Like, do well, do and, yeah. and kind of you hit on something in there. You're just like, I don't really know if there's any way that these characters could have solved this without this sequence of events. And I do think you are overall correct. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I mean, like, I'm media literate enough, right? That like, I'm just like, okay, everything is going to loop back around. Somehow it's just a matter of time. You know what I mean? Like, it's like one of those things where, you know, it's like, as soon as I saw the, like the maze that Desmalchian drew, I'm like, oh yeah, that's like, that's the amulet. Mm-hmm. Like from the beginning, from the dead guy. So I'm like, okay, so he's somebody involved in this. Who he is, I don't know. And then later when like the lady, who Mrs. Jones, Alex's, who's not actually Alex, is not aunt, you know, when she says, oh, yep. And like, when my husband, just like, I used to do this a lot more when my husband was around, and I'm like, bam, that's who is in the basement. And like, you know what I mean? Like these things, they aren't cheap. They fit together nicely. It is a good unfolding of a mystery in that, like, I didn't see any of those things coming from a mile away. But the second I laid eyes on the clues, I made the connections myself before the movie. You know what I mean? So like, yeah. in that way, yeah. It is good. A negative that I have to that is, other than like Hugh Jackman being the protagonist of this film and kind of like playing some moments of like, I'm deeply disturbed and I do have some conflicts about this, we never really grapple with him torturing a mentally disabled person.
Oh, I think we do. I mean, I mean, I don't think he does because he's not going to. I think that like his right. symbolic punishment is being trapped in the hole. It's like, yeah, you're like, again, it is.
But, I agree.
Metaphorical and some, yeah. So, sorry,
and I agree, but also if the film doesn't unfold this way, we maybe don't get the mystery. Like, we don't unlock it. So that's kind of my thing is like, that's why I kept waiting for like that to be what the film becomes is like, I want it to be this movie about, you know, about like the cycle of violence. Right. And like, oh, now he like somebody deeply, deeply, deeply wrongs him and violates him and violates his family. And that ruins him. And he, you know, and then the film becomes about how do you deal with a person like that? Mm-hmm. And it does leave it in this weird middle ground that I don't like very much. Like, I don't need the film to be like, I don't know. I don't need the film to absolve him. And I don't need the film to like, give me the, like the Twitter brain level, like, oh, actually, like I need the film to spell out clearly for me that like, it thinks what he's doing is bad. But it does kind of have this question of like, he's kind of vindicated because him doing all of this is what leads to his daughter getting saved. And I don't love that.
I mean, at
that.
Least in terms of, I mean, I think you could also make the argument that there's the alternate universe where Detective Loki's on his own track and he figures it out and comes to the house, gun drawn, and has pretty much the same interaction before he ever gets there too.
Sure, but that's not the movie we got. So.
No, it's not. And that, well, yeah, but you can think about that version of events. I think that, I mean, this movie is not perfect. I certainly not. This is like a really strong, like 7-8 star movie for me that I just like and find very easy to watch. But also, I mean, I do think that, and I think primarily this is also like, we have seen in the years since this is, we talked about Enemy. Initially, we were going to record this episode quite a bit closer to our Enemy episode. And then Dune Part 2 got delayed. So we were like, okay, whatever. We'll kind of do it post Dune Part 2. But up till Dune Part 2, I think we've seen Denis Villeneuve really try to take like mass market popcorn entertainment and like inject it with a little bit of moral philosophy. And a little bit of musing on the nature of why humans act the way they do. That certainly follows all the way up to Dune Part 2. I don't think it's 100% successful in this movie, but I think it's certainly there. And I think this works better as straight plot-driven, popcorn thriller than it does philosophical text, but it's there. Correct. I mean, I think there's the thing that I noticed, especially watching a couple of times, is there is this question. I think there is a suggestion at like, what kind of person does a cycle of abuse create? Because the thing with Jackman's character, and I think it's almost something that's a little buried by Jackman's performance. I think if that guy was a little bit more naturalistic and a little bit less exaggerated, it might pop out a bit more. But like that guy was on edge from the beginning of the movie.
Correct.
Like that guy,
I agree.
Yeah, like that's the point of the reveal of the prepper tent. And there's all these references to like, what kind of guy talks about protecting his family that much? What kind of promise is that to make to your wife and kids? Why is the one thing you tell your son, like, good job shooting that deer? Like, and then a weird haunted voice talk about like, well, the one thing that my father taught me is you need to be prepared in case like something goes bad. Makes you question what kind of relationship did he have with his father that led him to be this kind of person? He's an alcoholic. He makes like, I one of the things that I really picked up on this time is that like, as much as Hugh Jackman is a really overt actor, he has made the choice that that character is a really bad actor.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that comes to him really naturally is the lie. And I don't think it's a lie of like a first drink in 9.5 years. Like, okay, what's that about? Detective Loki. One of my favorite things about this movie is that I think because that character is so stylized and Gyllenhaal is giving such a specific twitchy, like, internal performance, you keep waiting for like, well, wait, what's the secret about this guy? What's the secret about this guy? Like, what's his deal? And you never really find out. You just kind of have to assume. The one thing you get is that like when he's interrogating the drunk priest, is he talks about being from the all boys school. And he's like, I don't remember the name of the school, but the line, something to the effect of like, oh, well, you know where I grew up in blank boys school. So you know how much it would mean to me if I could really do a number on a guy like you. Mm-hmm. And like a throwaway line that kind of tells you everything you need to know about that guy's character, that all these people are acting in these ways because they are trapped in these cycles, because they are just doing onto others the things that were done onto them.
Right.
Yeah. And like, that's pretty cool. I think that's good. I think it's interesting.
But that's kind of my thing is like, I see those themes in there and then I see that this is like some pulpy, like also kind of like some pulpy nonsense, right? Like,
oh yeah. Like, oh yeah. Boxes of snakes.
Some very like, 20 years after the fact, like, remember how good Silence of the Lambs is, you guys? Like that is like kind of what this film is doing. And it's like in the way that the Silence of the Lambs, the film really elevates the pulp material by making it like excruciatingly human. And in a way that is like, it is like, this is pulp psychology. This is pop psychology. This is kind of like on the page, it's goofy nonsense. And so the way to elevate this is really get ourselves in the headspace of like, what would a person have to actually be to do this? And like, how can we embody it? Like, if we don't outright explain and make it part of the text, if we don't even imply like the past that these characters have had, the ways that these characters have lived, how can we embody it to where it feels so organic and real in a way that is like very insanely gripping?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I either need this film to do that so much more. I need this film to like be the Silence of the Lambs, or I need it to be like you know, I need it to be something more akin to like Hard Candy, where it is just like, oh, fuck, guys, like we're in this situation and we can't leave. So we just got it. And like this kind of like a lot of the like implied or hinted at like moral questions. And then like kind of neatly wrapping up the story, because like, okay, here's the, to go back to the Silence of the Lambs thing, it is a thing. It is so thematic where it is like Clarice is this person who is like deeply, deeply traumatized. There are all of these deeply traumatic, like traumatized people in this film. And you have Buffalo Bill, who has like led a life full of trauma and full of terror and full of awfulness. And he is the bad guy because he perpetuates that cycle of violence onto other people, right? And then you have Clarice, where it's like, it is like, it is such a, I mean, it's literally the Lecter speech, right? Of like, and you think that if you can save this girl, that like maybe those lambs will stop screaming, huh? Like that's what you want. And it is like, there is something so deep inside of her that is like, maybe if I can just save a person, then like my life will be worth something, right? And I kind of feel like Gyllenhaal is solving this mystery because he's a sad cop and that's his job.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like Jackman is losing his fucking mind because he is a man and that's his child.
Yeah.
And I want them to grapple with those things more or not at all. Right?
Yeah.
Like I want this to be a community theater production of like Hugh Jackman loses his mind on stage while Jake Gyllenhaal solves a mystery, or I want this to be like an extremely deep and pensive like character study. And it's kind of neither, and it kind of frustrates me.
Yeah, no, I get that. Works though. I think it works and I think it's good. I think it's really silly and I think everything's a little exaggerated.
But that's the thing.
And it makes it go down so smooth.
See, that's the thing. It's for me, it doesn't go down smooth. For me, it sticks in my craw because it's like, you know, okay, let's put it this way. I kind of feel like this film is a pickleback, right?
Oh, God. Well, now you're making me not like it.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? It's
disgusting
like,
beverage, but okay, go on.
But this is my take, right? In theory, these two things that don't go very well together, you mix them together. And is it like the most delicious drink you've ever had? No. But the fact that it's two very different things, they kind of neutralize each other. And for some people, that is such a positive. For some people, that is them being like, oh my God, I can just rip shots of whiskey if you put pickle juice in it because it neutralizes that bite. But the whiskey neutralizes the brine of the pickle and you just get like a very light pickle aftertaste. That's amazing. Where other people go, why the fuck would anybody want to drink that? That sounds so unpleasant. And even if constructed, like the way it is constructed technically works, and I get it, like it does technically work. And I look at the construction of it and I go, oh yeah, I see what they're doing over there. And just because it works on a technical level that I can acknowledge, because like I'll do a pickleback when people offer them to me, I'll do them, but I've never once asked for one, right? And that is my metaphor for this film.
Yeah,
that is my metaphor for you, the different ways you and I look at this film.
I see it. I would adjust the metaphor because a pickleback is a disgusting thing, and why anybody would want to drink pickle juice and not taste delicious whiskey is
sure.
A mystery to me. I would say maybe it's like a shot of tequila and a little bit of lime after. You don't need the lime, but it sure does make it taste good.
And I disagree. I don't think
is a shot of tequila with lime as classy or as well constructed or as perfect as a really well made margarita? No, but still pretty good. Still pretty good. Hugh Jackman uses a hammer to destroy a sink.
Yeah, I don't like it.
His hair is so slicked back. It's so slicked back.
It is. Well, and it's funny that we're having this conversation because we both gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd. We gave it the same rating.
I think for you, that's like kind of a reach. And for me, I think for you, that's just like a strong 7. And for me, that's like a weak 8, you know?
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. My 4 is like, oh man, this movie like rules and it's really easy to watch and I enjoy watching it. But like, yeah, there's some problems. I see it. It's not the most perfectly constructed thing in the world.
Yeah. And I have the exact opposite thing of just like, oh boy, technically this thing is really humming, but like, oh boy, do I have some issues with what's going on screen. But like that Viola Davis, like when she, Viola Davis, everybody talks about the snot faucet that she has on her face, which is good. A thing that people don't give Viola Davis enough credit for about her crying, because we're so fixated, because the snot faucet is so unique. She has a left eye that shoots a first tear out like a bullet.
Yeah.
And every time she does it, I do the Leonardo DiCaprio meme of there it is.
Yep.
And it's like, and I know if we hold on this long, the snot faucet is going to come, but it is just that thing of like, I feel like the Viola Davis, like left eye tear bullet is like a, it is like, that's like a threshold that you cross in a movie, right? It's like, okay, now we are at the point where she cries, and it's just like, and it arrives like a freight train, baby.
She is such a good actor that every time she has the scene with Paul Dano, I expect Hugh Jackman to like grab a screwdriver and start undoing the torture. Like, all right, that's the scene before he builds it, but I expect him to like let him out. You know, yeah. I expect like Hugh Jackman to like, before she can undo his bindings, like come over and push her out of the way and be like, you've convinced me. I got to let him out. Yeah, she's awesome. This is we take a pickleback shot. We record these out of order. this is after we're going to have talked about Solaris last week with JJ, but it is didn't even realize we were putting him on the schedule that we'd have two good Viola Davis shedding tears movies in a row. But, you know, you love to see it. It's great. She's the best performance in this movie. Just that one interaction she has with Dano is incredible.
Yeah, it is very good. She's always so good. Like truly, like it is one of those things that like, I mean, we talk about people elevating shit in this movie. I did text you as I was watching this and I said, it's fucking insane that Jackman, Gyllenhaal, Howard, Davis, and Dano have all played major comic book characters in giant like $100+ million movies since this movie has come out. David S. Malkin pops up later, who like, he's not really playing a comic book character, he's playing an original character in a comic book movie, but like,
well, he's also, no, he plays the polka dot.
Oh shit, too. You're right. Egg on my face.
He's in every universe, as he should be. And he's the Spot. He's two Spot-based villains. That's weird to think about. I just put that together.
Wait, what do you mean he's the Spot?
Oh, no, he's not. I'm so stupid.
No, that's Schwartzman.
Schwartzman.
He is Polka Dot Man.
He is Polka Dot Man. And then isn't he even in Spider-Verse as well? Isn't he somebody in Spider-Verse?
Maybe. Let's find out.
Am I imagining that? I don't know.
Google. I think so.
I think there is... weirdly something to that, in that I think it really lends into this movie's exaggerated melodramatic style that all these actors are the kind of performers that work well in comic book movies. I think it also really, you texted that, and the thing I immediately thought of is like, it kind of sucks that like superhero movies already blew their one shot at Gyllenhaal with like a not great version of Mysterio.
Yeah, right. One of my favorite actors and one of my favorite villains doing a very mediocre thing with both of them.
And like that is just not the right villain for Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal's got such a weird, cagey energy that would be really well used in, I don't know, some other like more intense comic book villain, you know? You could bring 100%. That melodrama and that intensity to something else. He should be in fucking The Batman 2. He should be like Mr. Freezer. Did you find
I would
out?
Take
is
it.
He in Spider-Verse?
Oh, he's not in Spider-Verse, no.
He's not, but... Probably just thinking of Schwartzman. So I like this movie. I think you're going to watch it in 2 years and you're going to be like, all is forgiven. This one rules. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I can see myself having that experience with this of like... of like, for me, this movie is like driving down the highway, like you're in the passenger seat and it's just like, you know, whatever your favorite fast food restaurant is, like, just like you see at the next exit, you're like, oh shit, there's a Wendy's up there. And like, I don't really need to stop, but like, I could go for some Wendy's. And then the car just keeps going and you're like, oh, okay, I guess we're not going to Wendy's. And then like, it's just that several times there are all of these moments where it like, it implicates that we might take a detour and then we don't. And I think now that I know where the film is going, because I kept getting so excited, I kept seeing the signs of just like, oh, I think this is where this movie's going to go. And then it just like didn't go there. And it's like, no time. There's a medallion. There's a maze.
Yeah. See, unburdened from the wondering what's going to happen next in the plot. I think you can really just bask in the like, oh yeah, there's the medallion. And like, ah, oh, the maze room. I love the maze room. Ah, oh, the snake boxes. I love the snake boxes.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say this is my third favorite season of True Detective.
This is the energy that True Detective should be bringing.
It is. Are you caught up on True Detective?
Night Country, no. I went like two episodes into the Colin Farrell season and I said, this is not what I want.
Season two is pretty bad. Season three is pretty good. Season four is just a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Season four is... I am a centrist on season four, but that's also because I was a little bit behind. So by the time I got to it, everyone's like, that was terrible. And I was like, yeah, it was okay.
Jodie Foster, though. That's just
Jodie Foster's great in it. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with Naiad. Like we talked about on this very podcast that like neither True Detective season four nor Naiad are very good, but she is fucking stunning to watch every second she's on screen in either of them. Like I can't get enough. So
it's kind of the thing about True Detective, and it's something that you can't reproduce. It's the great like difficulty of True Detective is that so much of what works about that first season is the really peculiar relationship between those two guys. And that is something that you cannot reproduce for a number of reasons, but like something that I think, and it's, if I had to guess, it's probably why the Mahershala season goes over better is like, honestly, Gyllenhaal would be a really good candidate for a True Detective season. Like, you need to get, like, high-profile, Oscar-winning or nominated actors that are really good at playing people that have deep, dark, terrible secrets. And, like, always bring the, I have a deep, dark, terrible secret energy to nearly every moment they're on screen. And, yeah, like, McConaughey's great at that. Mahershala's great at that. Jodie Foster's really good at that. Colin Farrell, who I love. It's not really his thing.
Actually, I think the main cast of True Detective Season 2, I think they are all actually very good. I just think that that story is so fucking lame. I actually even think that Vaughn is very good in a kind of, like, in kind of an unhinged way. I just think that the writing is really bad.
I forgot he was in that. Yeah, they should do, like, a Jake Gyllenhaal, Viola Davis season of True Detective. Wouldn't that rule?
I would watch it.
I'd watch the hell out of that. That'd be great.
I would watch it.
They should do a Paul Dano, David Dasmalkian season. True Detective. Just two sweet little guys.
Yeah. Have you seen Late Night with the Devil yet? I am very...
Is that like a real movie? Is that like a YouTube short? Like,
no, it's like... It is the theatrically released film... it's at a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, ATM.
All right. I know Dasmalkian.
Certified Fresh. And I am ready for a Dasmalkian number one top billed performance. I'm ready for that. He has more than paid his dues in the city of Holly Weird. You see what I did there?
Whenever he's around, it's the city of Hollywood. That's true.
See?
I feel like he's going to, you know, in 15 years, he's going to get, like, the Giamatti Best Actor nomination. He's going to get one.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to wake up to, like, oh, David Dasmalkian has been, like, one of the great underappreciated, you know, weirdos that holds together, like, half of every fucking movie in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's great. He becomes one of, obviously, he's in Dune. He kind of becomes one of Denny's guys. God, Jake Gyllenhaal should be in Dune, too.
Oh, my God, yes.
He should be like, he should be like,
he should be Leto, too.
That would be really weird. Okay, so your contention is that you put together Zendaya and Timothée Chalamet, and the baby looks like Jake Gyllenhaal?
I don't see why not.
Sure. Yeah, that's a level of gene editing that only the Bene Gesserit can come up with. All right. Do you have any other thoughts about Prisoners?
I don't think so. Overall, good time.
It's a good time. It's a good movie. I like it. Corey, would you like to let the fine folks at home know where they can find more of this podcast on the internet?
Absolutely. If you like what you hear, please be sure to like us and subscribe wherever you stream your podcasts. Leaving a review would also really help out the visibility of the show. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, all at HHYNSpod. Special thank you to our patrons. If you'd like a shout out on the show and bonus content, head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/HHYNSpod.
Thank you so, so much. Next week, please tell me that we're doing something that's not horribly sad, because that we've been on a real run of sad shit.
You're telling me that Hard Candy Lost in Translation, Solaris and Prisoners wasn't the upbeat, soul lifting quadruple feature that everyone yearns for in their all times of stress? Movies,
all of those movies in their own special way make me question my will to live.
Well, we are, especially if you compound the last 4 weeks, we are correcting harder than maybe you could ever possibly correct starting next week. Because Carson, it has come to my attention that you, despite being in your middle later 20s, you've never seen the Muppet movie.
No.
That's a crime.
So pleasant. Yeah, it is. I should be shanghaied. I got to be taken down to the docks for that one. Yeah.
I am so interested to see what our conversation about that movie becomes once we've watched it, because it's like, I mean, everyone on this podcast has heard me discuss my love for the Muppets, my love for the craft of the Muppets, and my love for like how the Muppets are actually like incredibly artistically pure and sound and amazing. But also, like, it's just fun. Like, I'm so interested to see what our conversation ends up being.
I'm so excited. Caroline, I know you have a heart out in like 2 minutes before we go. If Prisoners is a Muppet movie and everyone's Muppets except for one person, who is it? Is it Paul Dano?
No. Sorry. It's gotta be Jake Gyllenhaal. It's gotta be Jake Gyllenhaal. Oh, that's, he's the one human too. Who's still there.
That's pretty good too. Yeah. Dano, just because then you get a Muppet, you get like Sam Eagle.
No. Really true, but torturing Paul Dano. That's fair. Yeah. That is very fair. That's very good. I think the Prisoner. But the thing is, think of how good Scooter would be as. role.
Oh man, Sam Eagle is Hugh Jack. Jake Gyllenhaal's person. Viola Davis is Miss Piggy. Terrence Howard is Kermit. Oh man. David Dastmalchian Beaker. Jake Sean Hall opens the door and he just says, meep a push, then he fucking pushes it in.
Maybe.
Oh, that's so good. Okay, all right. As you can tell, dear listeners, I'm very excited to watch the Muppet movie.
Because so,
I've
know,
not watched a lot of Muppet movies, but I do love the Muppets. Anytime they come up, I love them.
It's because they're wonderful. Well, really good. We will thank you all so, so much for listening. We will see you all next week when we talk about the Muppet movie.